but that's the old.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day, whether you are listening on our podcast version, whenever you have a chance to listen, or you're listening live on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 here at 4 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. We are glad to have you with us. And you don't know that we actually post this show as a podcast. You can get this show wherever you get your podcast. So if you maybe missed part of the show or you wanted to hear the whole thing at your leisure, you know, maybe not spending an hour in the car, we get that. You can always download us basically anywhere you get your podcast. Just look for Let's Go Pensacola. And sometimes you even get to hear a little more about what we've got going on. We'd love to hear what you think about what we're talking about. But let me go ahead and bring on to the show, joining me as he does so very often on the show. Please welcome, from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, man, how are you?
You know, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be back. We talked a little bit before we started recording and before we went on air and started kind of talking about, it feels like it's been a long time since you and I have been able to do this, and it's only been a week. A lot can happen in a week. A lot can happen in the world of pop culture, but before we kind of kick gears and kind of start talking about the topics that we have planned for today, we kind of wanted to take a moment to acknowledge everybody that's checking out the podcast, as well as let you know that your opinion matters to us. So we often love to hear from people that are checking out the show, and we also would love a little bit of feedback in regard to the direction of the show. What are some of the segments that you like the most? What are some that maybe aren't resonating with you as much? You can email Julio and let us know what you think. We would love to hear from you. Julio, how do they find you that way?
Yeah, you can always email me at gopensacola@gmail.com. So just like Let's Go Pensacola without the let's. gopensacola@gmail.com. That comes directly to me. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. And I think it's interesting because we do get a little bit of indirect feedback through looking at our podcasts and seeing how many downloads they've had and that sort of thing. And Jeremy and I have spent some time looking at that and seeing what people seem to be responding to, at least in terms of listens, more than others. But we don't know whether that's capturing what the folks that are listening on radio like and don't like about the show. So especially if you listen live on the air here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, we would love to hear from you. And here are the kinds of things that you would like to hear us talk about. Like one of the things we were talking about is we have very often on this show gone through like week to week recap/reviews of TV series.
Yeah.
And that seems to maybe not be our most successful podcast episodes. I mean, if we're looking at things where we get an average amount of listeners versus where we get an above average amount of listeners. And we're kind of wondering if maybe, you know, if you don't necessarily follow that show week to week, maybe that's not something that you're interested in. Maybe you'd be more interested in hearing kind of a sum up of the show when it's over. And then, you know, maybe you can make a decision of whether that's something you want to go back and watch a lot. Because I know a lot of people don't necessarily watch a streaming show week to week. They'll wait until the whole thing is finished and binge the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which,
and it's also possible that maybe some of you really love it and you'd like to have it as supplemental material, but it doesn't necessarily fit in the show. We're real interested to hear what y'all have to say about that.
Yeah. So we are going to be talking about a couple of shows this week that we've been enjoying. One of which is Agatha All Along, which we have talked about a few times on a semi week to week basis and as much as we can and during football season where we're often preempted. But we're also going to be talking about Penguin, which I don't think we've actually talked about at all on the show. Or if we did, it was very briefly. We definitely haven't gone through a week-by-week recap with that show. And that show has completed all 8 episodes now. So we're going to be talking about that show in more of an overview sense. I think we'll be talking about Agatha in more of an overview sense, too. And, you know, just let us know if that's something you like a little more, or if you like the week-to-week recaps. If you are more interested in hearing about movies or music or, you know, other aspects of pop culture, we'd like to know that too. You know, we'd love to hear from you in general, basically. If you listen to the show at all, if you, even if you hate us, even if you think, hey, you know, why don't you guys instead start talking about, you know, Guatemalan sandworms?
Man, I wish.
I don't even know if that's a thing, but I think that just hit my head because there's a new Dune series starting on Max this week. But yeah, you know, whatever you're interested in, we'd like to hear, you know, there's topics you'd like to hear us talk about that we haven't talked about. One thing we've noticed is that on the podcast version, we seem to get more listeners when we talk about horror. And we are going to talk a little bit about a horror icon a little later in the show who unfortunately left us this week. So, you know, that'll be something as well. So, like, you know, if you're more interested when we talk about horror, and Jeremy and I both love horror movies and horror TV series, we would not have a problem with talking about that kind of stuff more often. But, you know, this is your show as much as it is our show is what we're saying here. Except that we actually are the ones that record it and decide what we do in the end. But we would like to have some influence from our listeners to see what you think and what you want to hear about. So let us know. Again, email us anytime, gopensacola@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Co-signed. And before we get into our regularly scheduled program, we like to kind of kick things off with some random things that are going on in the world of pop culture. And Wicked and Gladiator 2 are coming out soon, Julio. These are two, I guess, highly highly anticipated movies.
You sound skeptical. Are you not anticipating either of those films?
I couldn't give a crap about either of these.
Wow.
Not at all.
So there's this theory that they're like Hollywood is trying to duplicate the Barbenheimer thing. That Wicked is the female audience and Gladiator is the male audience, and you know, maybe we'll have like double feature date nights or whatever, yada yada, like whatever that phenomenon was. I always think if you're trying to chase a phenomenon, you're already too late.
Yeah, do you remember when they did It Ends with Deadarine?
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same ring to it.
Well, I mean, that worked a little bit, I guess. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, to put it in the words of one of the great minds of our time, stop fetch happen, Gretchen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You can't, like, what happened with Barbenheimer was organic.
It was.
I mean, okay. It was two separate studios. They were competing against each other, and it just were two. It happened to be two films that hit the zeitgeist that hit at the same time. I don't think that you can manufacture that.
I agree with you. I didn't know if the first was actually organic, even if it wasn't. It's really hard to replicate.
I just don't know. And I don't know that that's actually what's going on here. I'm not saying that the two, because this is two separate studios, and I'm not saying that they've conspired together to try to create something. I mean, there is a theory of counter-programming that goes on in film release strategy. And on the surface, these two films are kind of counter-programming each other. On the other hand, both of these films are, at least among certain audiences, very highly anticipated.
Absolutely. That's a me thing. I think a lot of people are really excited about seeing Wicked and Gladiator as, you know, one of Ridley Scott's best films. I'm not big on sequels, and we'll see about Wicked, I guess. Are you excited about either of them?
I mean, I don't have a problem with sequels, but this sequel seems weird.
Yeah.
That's a better point. But the early buzz is really good. Early buzz on Wicked is really good too. So, like, I kind of want to see both movies. I was a lot more excited about Wicked before they decided that a show that you go see in one night on Broadway needs to be two movies.
What? Oh, they're doing two of them?
Yeah, they're doing two of them. This is part one.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. And yet is still somehow pretty long, too. So I don't know what's going on there. But, I mean, they're both films that I anticipate wanting to see. We'll see how it goes. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. everybody. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Man, I could play Cure songs all day long. I would love to have a show where I could just sit here and play The Cure all day long. Can we do that? Like, let's do that 1 week. We just won't talk and we'll just play The Cure for an hour.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I think that'll probably get me fired, but you know, it's worth a try anyway. But I play that song because one of the many really, really solid needle drops used in the just completed series Penguin, which has been airing on HBO and which you could still watch on Max. That has been like the, I always say this, if HBO puts something on Sunday night, that they're looking at that as like the prestige show of the moment.
Yeah,
like that's where House of the Dragon airs. That's where Last of Us airs. It goes all the way back to The Sopranos. And so this show, which is a spinoff of Matt Reeves' The Batman film that came out a couple of years ago, has followed Oz. In the comics, you know him as Oswald Cobblepot. Here he's Oswald Cobb or Oz Cobb. And Colin Farrell playing the same role that he played in the film. But this really is, let's set aside the Batman of it all. Because that's something this show really does. It does set aside the Batman of it all. There's a couple of little nods here and there, including at the very end of the final episode. And that's not really a spoiler. This is a crime drama. This is a straight up, straightforward crime family, organized crime drama. And if the character wasn't named Oswald Cobblepot, it would pretty much play out exactly the same, I think. And I'm here for that. Like I love comics. I love comic books. I make no bones about it. I love comic book movies and comic book shows and things that are derived from comic books, but this is absolutely deserving of the perch that HBO has given it. This is a straight up crime drama and it's brilliant.
I couldn't agree more. I feel like because we're going to be talking about Agatha All Along here coming up and the idea of counter-programming, while these are both kind of appealing to the same crossover audience in many ways, as far as the approach to them, it couldn't be any more different. And like you said, it's a crime drama, and this legacy of the Sunday night prestige television going back to The Sopranos, this kind of a through line between those two, because while I could see people maybe leveling the criticism that this is kind of standard gangster movie trope storytelling, I feel like it is just completely elevated by the performance of Colin Farrell, which we've praised him a lot even when The Batman came out, but also Kristen Milioti is so good in it.
So good. I mean, oh man, she is just phenomenal in this. And I've seen her in many things over the years, but nothing that really prepared me for this. Like she's done a lot of comedy. She was in the female lead in the great movie Palm Springs, or was it Palm Springs? Is that the right name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With Andy Samberg, a great, like a Groundhog Day-esque comedy where they keep repeating the same day over and over again.
Yeah.
Even before that, she was, of course, ended up being the titular mother in How I Met Your Mother. There was just a thought that very quickly flashed through my mind while I was watching the last episode of this series that, man, what would Ted Mosby think right now if he saw his wife? Just light years away from that character. And even in like a more serious thing, like people may have forgotten that because she kind of gets overshadowed by Margot Robbie in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. But
she was Jordan Belfort's first wife in Wolf of Wall Street. So you see, like much like the actual real life Leonardo DiCaprio, Jordan Belfort dumps his significant other when they get a little older and replaces her with a younger model. I think Jordan Belfort let him get older than 25. I know Leo has a very strict code against that. But, 25 is a more respectable age than some people we could name.
Yeah.
But we're not going there. At any rate.
We've also got the amazing performance by, and I'm going to say this wrong, but Renice Feliz, who plays Victor in it.
Yeah.
Just the whole supporting cast. Deidre O'Connell is awesome. And this is just a really in-depth character study about this character, huh?
Clancy Brown, Shora Agdashloo. Yeah. I mean, there's some bold-faced names in here, too. Thea Rossi, who's coming to Pensacon, who we're looking forward to seeing at Pensacon in February. Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, some really strong actors in this, and everybody, like, brings their A game.
It's very, very bleak. It's a very, very dark series, which I think is kind of true to the tone of the universe that Matt Reeves established with the Batman. This series was developed by Lauren LeFranc, and I'm not familiar with her work outside of this, but she definitely needs to be commended for just, like, sticking to her vision. Oz is such an interesting character because he's really set up as a... I think the point of this show is a lot of times we romanticize the anti-hero. It's a very, like, American thing to love the outlaw. But by the end of this series, it really pulls the rug out from under you and reminds you, like, oh, no, this isn't an anti-hero. This is a straight-up villain. He's a despicable human being, and any sympathy that he earns throughout the series due to a really nuanced performance, it's like at the end of the day, he is a monster.
And yet,
I love that they stuck to that.
And yet you still root for him.
In a
way that I haven't seen since Vic Mackey on The Shield. Colin Farrell's Oz Cobb. I keep wanting to call him Oswald Cobblepot because that's just, you know, years mm-hmm. and years and years of comic book, you know, ingrained in me, but
decades.
But this character played by Colin Farrell, that's a very high bar to match. I mean, the Shield is, I think, one of the shows that really, certainly built FX into what it is now. You know, that was the first show on FX that raised that bar that to where FX is now, in some ways, probably the new HBO.
Let me ask you this. You've mentioned several times, it's a conversation that we've had, where it doesn't matter if they deviate in adaptation from the comic book character, as long as they nail the essence of the character. Would you say that this is a true representation of the Penguin from any era of the comics, or do you feel like just simply out of the fact that they nailed what they were doing, that it doesn't matter anymore?
No, this is very much a representation of the Penguin as he has been in the comics for maybe the past 25 years or
okay.
so. 25, maybe 30 years. Like there was a shift in that character away from the Burgess Meredith on the 66 Batman series. I mean, like the Burgess Meredith version of that character on the 66 Batman series was what that character was at the time.
Sure.
There has been a shift away from that character being like the gentleman bandit and the, you know, the obsession with the birds and yada yada, to him being what he is at the end of the series, which is a quote unquote legitimate businessman.
It's also interesting that I didn't even put this together, but even in Batman Returns, he has political aspirations, which are actually a really big kind of through line in this as well. Or maybe it's a later development, but we realize he really has his sights set on infiltrating the Gotham government and becoming a political figure.
I believe there was a line in one of the last couple of episodes, if not the very last episode, that was taken directly from Batman Returns, in fact.
Oh, really?
Say something like, Oz Cobb, man of the people.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, that's how he presented himself in Batman Returns. And that version of Penguin is very different from this version of Penguin. But there are some through lines there. But yeah, this is the spirit of the character as he is in the comics today and as he has been in the comics for, like I say, about the past 20 to 25 years, where they've turned him into more of a, you know, he's got his fingers in illegal stuff, but he kind of tries to maintain this veneer of, you know, being legitimate and
being like for the people, which kind of reminds me of the It's really, there's a lot of stuff we could go into.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into any of the specifics. Like, I actually think the best way to discuss this is just to talk about, you know, how brilliantly written this show is, how brilliantly acted the show is, how brilliantly shot it is. It looks like $1 billion.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, this looks like a feature film. It does. Like, there's no,
sit in a season two.
There's not a lot of effects. There's not a lot of, you know, anything like that. But there is enough action and enough thrills in this to satisfy anybody, while it's still being a serious drama that I think ranks up there with shows like The Shield and, you know, The Sopranos and any kind of show that you could think of that deals with the underworld like this. Second season, Colin Farrell has said he's up for it, which he. There had been some stories a few weeks back where he's like, God, I don't want to get in that makeup again. But he is already contracted to be in the Batman film too, I believe.
Okay.
And I think that the response to the show has maybe swayed him a little bit more. What I want to see is this show get the love it deserves when the Emmys come around.
Yeah.
And I think that will be really the distinguishing factor here. The ratings have been very good. People are watching this show. So if it gets the critical love that it deserves, and it has gotten it review wise, if it gets it awards wise, yeah, I do think we see more of the show. Got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I've learned the lesson of all that's foul and fair. Our love is forged in fire, water, earth, and air. The spell is cast. How long it lasts, I cannot divine. The road is there, and so I dare to risk this heart of mine. Down, down, down the road, down the witch's road. Down, down, down the road, down the witch's road. Down, down, down the road, down the witch's road. Blood and tears and bone together and alone.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube. You know, Jeremy, I got to admit, the first time I heard the first version of that song, The Ballad of the Witch's Road, which is, of course, the recurring musical motif in Agatha All Along, the new series that just ended on Disney Plus, I was kind of iffy on it. But man, I find myself singing it to myself a lot.
By the time you are punched in the face with it 10 times, you finally submitted, huh?
I think it's got more of a hook to it than you think it does. And I think it's interesting because there's so many different versions of the song throughout the series. And I think some of it, too, ends up playing into how important that song ended up being and what that song ended up really symbolizing in this series. And we've talked about this series quite a bit over the course of the run. But I kind of don't want to get into too many more details. The whole series is out there on Disney Plus now. If you haven't watched it yet, you can stream it and check it out for yourself. But Jeremy, I know along the way you were iffy on this series. Now that we've come to the end of The Witch's Road, how do you feel about it?
It did win me over. So generally speaking, I feel like the first 3 to 4 episodes, and I mean, it's by design, I get it, but each of the kind of little initial trials, it kind of felt like the same episode over and over from maybe episode 2 to episode 4. And then when it kind of started to break away from that and more important things, I guess, started to happen, I got more engaged with it. I like what they did with Agatha as a character. I thought the last episode in particular was really, really strong. But I don't know if I'm overthinking it or underthinking it, but it didn't make a lot of sense to me, if I'm being honest. I mean, things are happening for sure, and I didn't really get some of it. In particular, in the 7th episode, I was kind of like, what is going on? And that's okay sometimes, but I'm wondering, like, if I missed something major or if it just, I maybe I just am supposed to take it at face value and that be what it is. But overall, I thought the show was fine. Where WandaVision starts really, really strong and kind of ended on a note that I didn't find as interesting, I feel like Agatha started in a place that I didn't really find interesting, and by the time I got to the end of it, I appreciated it a lot more.
See, I liked the show the whole way through, but I think that this is a show that built to some significant revelations.
Yes.
And once those revelations are revealed, I think it makes you go back and look at the whole series in a different light.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the way that it actually plays some of those early moments from another perspective and how it does kind of recontextualize what was going on in the reality that we're kind of inhabiting in this world. I think that the performances from all of the cast members were good. I just didn't get a real fulfilling emotional experience out of it until the kind of what would almost be like an epilogue, like the end of the series. I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty effective.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a show that maybe will benefit from an audience that watches it in a binge rather than watching it week to week like we did.
I
enjoyed it week to week, but I wonder if for somebody like yourself that was kind of iffy on the first couple of episodes, whether it would have played better if you'd watched it all in one, you know, long sitting, basically.
I will say I seem to be in the minority. It's a well-received show. People seem to really appreciate it, and I like that. And I like that Marvel did something drastically different from the norm, as they did with WandaVision as well. So, like, I'm always going to encourage taking risks and going in a slightly different direction, and would never, like, disparage them from that. However, one thing that Agatha did have going against it, and this is strictly my own bias, is it was playing concurrently as the Penguin, which I just find superior on every level. However, it probably speaks way more directly to my particular sensibilities and the kind of storytelling that I like, you know?
See, but I don't even judge these two things as being on the same playing field. I recognize they're both television series adapted from comic book characters, but they have such different perspectives and different goals and different styles that they don't really operate in. Putting aside that one's Marvel and one's DC, they don't really operate on the same plane. Like I try to judge everything by, does it do what it's trying to do?
Yeah.
Like I can single out for you when I kind of came to this conclusion of this is like the best way to evaluate a piece of media, a piece of art. I remember fairly early in my career as a journalist when I was getting together some movie reviews for publication. And I think it was the Associated Press review at the time of this was, and this will date about when we're talking about here, the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the Lizzie McGuire movie had come out, and this review was just like, well, this does not remotely compare to the Russian art film that I saw last night about people of the same age. And it's like, well, yeah, of course it doesn't. They're not trying to do the same thing. That, you know, this is a, you know, does the Lizzie McGuire movie succeed at being, you know, a popcorn movie for teens, and does it work on that level? That's what you review it on, not, you know, well, I'm setting it up against this, you know, serious Russian drama about strung out teenagers. That's
point taken.
If that's totally what the Lizzie McGuire movie tried to be, of course it was going to fail, but that's not what it's trying to be. And but I'm not, I've never seen the Lizzie McGuire movie. I don't know if it's good or not, but right. I know that that's not what you go in judging it on.
I point taken, and I think that's completely valid. I think, though, with all things that are essentially subjective in nature, I know there's even a debate to be had about that, but like the human experience does play a factor, and preference, and the thing that I prefer is clearly going to be the thing that I prefer, even though you're right. You should be able to look at them both objectively. It doesn't mean that even from an objective lens that both things are going to resonate with you. And what I think DC has been fighting on the back foot for pretty much their entire run. So that comparison to me is always that Marvel versus DC kind of tribalism, kind of these two studios warring, always is a factor that's in the back of my mind.
Well, I mean, let me put it to you in a broader perspective and tell me what you think here. Watchmen and Richie Rich are both comic books.
Sure.
Would you want a Richie Rich movie to be Watchmen, or Watchmen to be a Richie Rich movie?
No.
Would you judge a Richie Rich movie on the same criterion that you judge a Watchmen movie on?
I mean, yeah, in a way, yes, because I think really it always just falls back on what do you like or what do you prefer, and while you can't judge them according to are they the same, but you can judge them according to what moves you versus what doesn't move you, right?
You just want to see Zack Snyder's Richie Rich, don't you?
Maybe I do.
Are you a Snyder brony?
You know I love Zack Snyder, dude. Jack Snyder, whatever his name is. My favorite director.
Jack Snyder. That's what he's going to start making movies under, because nobody will... No, I'm not Zack Snyder. I'm Jack Snyder. Please, give me money.
The point taken, though, I think you do make very good points, and I think that that is part of the responsibility of being a good film critic in general. So I'm not dismissing that at all.
Yeah, I mean, judging this show on its own merits, I don't think it has the same aspirations that Penguin has, but I think it succeeds at the aspirations that it does have.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it. I really liked that also that, you know, this is a film... or a series, really, that is largely about older women, and does so successfully. And you think it passes the Bechdel test, which I like. And you know, you have some new characters introduced to the Marvel universe that can go on and play without this being something that you've either felt like you had to rely on a lot of deep bench knowledge on, or you necessarily have to follow from here. Like that feels like the way forward for me for Marvel.
Yeah,
in a way that some of this franchise it plays against some of that franchise fatigue that's out there.
By the way, I love that cameo, that recurring or that character that came back from WandaVision. That's probably a huge spoiler that I won't say, but that was really funny to see him brought back in.
Maybe I missed something. Oh, I know who you're talking about now. Yes.
Yeah. Of course.
And that worked fine. You know it. It does still take place in that world. We saw a few characters actually in this that were in WandaVision, although some of them in a very limited way. But you know, it wasn't like, oh, you have to watch this to know what's going on Secret Wars or anything like that. Could something from here play into Secret Wars? Absolutely. Is there probably some setup for a future Young Avengers project? Absolutely. But it didn't feel like incomplete, and it didn't feel like there was no post-credit scene here. And there's no, now you've got to watch this. We'll see what comes next.
For sure.
We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. Jeremy, We lost one of the icons this week, at least in terms of horror movies. Although the gentleman is certainly had a large career beyond just horror, but perhaps best known role was, of course, the Candyman in the titular film series. The great Tony Todd passed away this week. Again, you know, started as Candyman, but was also the lead in the remake of Night of the Living Dead, was in movies like Platoon, TV series like Chuck. He did a fair amount of animation work. He had a recurring role in Star Trek as Worf's brother. You know, just a great character actor, whether he was playing, you know, a guest role on a TV series or the lead in, you know, arguably one of the best horror franchises of the 90s.
Yeah.
And just also, I think both of us had a chance to meet him. He was here for Pensacon in, I believe it was 2015. I believe it was the second year of the con. And I think both of us had at least a brief encounter with him. So I wanted to give you a chance to talk about what your meeting with the man was like.
Yeah. So Candyman is one of my favorite movies. Absolutely love that. He was also in The Crow in a very, very small role.
He
accumulated over 240 credits, which is just unbelievable. So great work ethic. And I'm very cautious about idolizing or making role models out of celebrities. I can totally appreciate a person's body of work without ever like speaking to them on a personal or speaking of them on a personal level. But because I did experience like a very small relationship with Tony Todd, I feel pretty good about just saying he was a stand-up guy from all accounts. He did a lot of community outreach. He was very involved with mentoring, you know, kind of communities where they didn't really have resources and money and things like that. He was like just very engaged with community activities, and I thought that was like something to be commendable. And then on top of that, like, he was just super nice. He was super nice. About a week before the convention, I had made this little video that was kind of like in honor of Tony Todd. He's coming to Pensacon this week, and he saw it and he added me on Twitter, and we kind of talked back and forth a little bit before I got there. And I have a signed headshot of him here that says, "To Jeremy, thanks for a Twitter person of merit." And it's all in little quotation marks, you know, just kind of a jokey thing. But we kept up with each other after that, had, you know, a dozen different conversations over the next several years. And I just was always a really big fan of his work, became a fan of him as a person. And sometimes, and Julio, I'm sure you can attest to this as well, most of the times you meet celebrities and people that you admire and they make a good impression on you, there are other times that the person just kind of lets you down in one way or another. But I came into that just being like, oh, this guy is an awesome horror icon, and came out of it like, wow, he's like a pretty good human. So that's kind of my, you know, farewell to Tony Todd. I know his movies and his work will live on forever, but, as a person, he seemed like a genuinely good dude.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I didn't realize that you'd had so much conversation with him over the years. So,
yeah,
that's pretty amazing. My encounter with him was much more brief, unfortunately. I would have loved to have spent more time talking to him, but I just had a very brief encounter with him in the elevators at the Pensacola Bay Center. Get in the elevator and then he steps in alongside Tyler Mane.
Oh, wow.
So we're talking about like Tony Todd was a big guy, something like 6'4", you know, he's a big imposing dude. Tyler Mane's even bigger and more imposing. Tyler Mane's,
and
like,
not just that, you're in the elevator with Michael Myers and Candyman.
Yeah, among other things, yes.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's just this very brief thing of like, looking up at these, and you know, this is also at the time I was a much bigger guy. I've, you know, as a lot of people know, I've lost a lot of weight over the last couple of years, But so at the time, for me to feel small was a rare thing.
Yeah.
Like the only other person I could think of that ever made me feel small was Christian Nairn, Hodor from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, sure.
I've actually got a photo with him and like next to him, even when I weighed, 350 pounds, I look very small next to him.
Mm.
So, I'm looking up at these guys and it's only a couple, you're in an elevator. That's going to be what, a minute, 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I did shake Tony Todd's hand, get to tell him that I really enjoyed his work on Chuck, which I figured was something
nice.
That he doesn't get as much conversation about as other things. People may not remember he was in the first few seasons of that show as, I believe, the director of the CIA, if I'm not mistaken. I was a big fan of that show. Maybe rethinking that lately, but that's only because of some of the people that were in that show, but not
sure.
Not because of Tony Todd, because he very much seemed like a great guy. And everybody I've ever known that's ever met him and spent any time with him has nothing but good things to say about him.
Incredible voice.
Yeah, and lent itself to a lot of voice work as well. So in addition to all the times you've seen his face on screen, voicing, perhaps most recently, and one of the things a lot of people probably heard his voice in, he played Venom in the most recent Spider-Man video game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was, those games, a lot of times people forget these video games sometimes have a bigger audience than movies do.
Mm-hmm.
Just tremendous amounts of people and tremendous amounts of money in that industry. He voiced Venom. He voiced Zoom on The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
He has voiced Darkseid in various animated projects. So, he's played some heavyweight characters from, from the worlds of comics, from the worlds of animation. And what do you think his legacy is, man? What do you think people are going to remember him most for? Do you think it's Candyman or do you think it's, what is it?
Yeah. I think if you were to ask him, I think he would acknowledge it was Candyman. And I'm not going to say that's unfortunate. I don't think that any work should be, held above or kind of ranked below other things that he's done. I do think a large part of his legacy is going to be playing that role. However, that is my particular lens. That's my perspective. And to somebody else, he is going to be Venom from the Spider-Man game. And to somebody else, he is going to be the guy from Chuck. And like, that's kind of one of the amazing things about having such a vast body of work is he's connected with people on all different spectrums of fandom. And above all of that else, that the most important thing is that while he was here, he was a good guy, and he used his celebrity and his influence to do positive things in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that's ultimately what he'll be best remembered for. I do think it's probably Candyman. I think it's interesting because Candyman was not really that successful when it was initially released.
No, but us horror fans are weird with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually saw it theatrically when it was initially released. I don't think there's a lot of people that can say that, but I did.
Uh-uh.
I really liked the movie, and I think that he is also one of the first, at least, if not one of the few, black icons in horror.
Yeah.
And I think that's important too. Certainly from the standpoint of being I don't want to say the villain, but I mean, I guess technically the villain. Candyman was mm-hmm. also a more sympathetic monster than a lot of the horror monsters of the 80s and 90s. Like in that way, he kind of harkens back to the Universal monsters in a way.
Oh, good point.
I think that, you could find, maybe not for Dracula, but for certainly the Frankenstein's monster or the Wolfman, or even the Gill Man, you could find a certain level of sympathy for mm-hmm. and identification with them as monsters. And I think that that is something that holds true for Candyman as well. And I think that that's something that the humanity that he brought to that character makes a difference in that character and makes that character what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had that, Would you call it a reboot? You can't really necessarily call it a reboot because it's the new version of Candyman that came out a couple of years ago, which Tony Todd was in. You know, he wasn't the main Candyman in that movie, but he was in it. We did see his Candyman in that movie. I think makes a good effort to continue that. And I just, that's ultimately going to be the role that people look at the most, I think. But no matter what, obviously we're very sorry to see him go. We want to express our sympathies to his family and his friends and his many, many fans, of which Jeremy and I absolutely are two of them. Rest in peace, Tony. You know, we hope you'll always be remembered for, like I said, being a great person. We've got to go for this week. We'll see you back next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.